I've been all across this
folks.
Country.
Welcome to Monday Night Shaw, right here on the Backbreaker Media Network. I am Kyle Shaw, your gracious host, a.k.a. the Canadian Goose. And on the show today, for his second appearance on Monday Night Shaw, and yes, if you're a regular listener of the show, you didn't get a chance to hear his first appearance, because unfortunately, this is one of the few podcasts I recorded in person. And then on the way home, jostling around in my pocket, the device that happened to record the podcast deleted the podcast, and I felt incredibly horrible about it. But it is my good friend, TA3, Thaddeus Archer III. And Thad, how are you doing, bud? Thanks for coming on and doing this for me.
Absolutely. No, I'm doing great, and I've owed you a rain check for the Phantom episode for quite a long time, so I figured, you know me, I like to do things in person, hence our first one, but, you know, with everything COVID, when you said you dropped me a line saying let's record, I was, let's do it. So, yeah, no, I'm here, and I'm great, and if I sound a little tired, I just did my workout for the day on my 30 to 31 days of DDP yoga right now. So,
okay. How's that going?
Good. Body's sore. Like, DDP yoga isn't very, it can be intense, but it's not very intense. But doing it here, I've been, you know, working my way to work out, been on like a little bit of a weight loss journey. I know you shared yours today, and I've shared little tidbits of mine, but basically on mid-June I turned 40, so I wanted to reach a goal weight by 40, and so I did it in really through diet initially for the first handful of months. You know, I got about halfway through the pandemic and realized I'm drinking and eating way too much sitting at home doing nothing. So so got on improving myself, improving my sleep, some calf issues, some leg issues that had been more than I knew a pain in my side or my legs for how long. I tackled that with some therapy, and then once the therapy had kind of worked its course, I started working out again, but I sort of took baby steps. And so I've been doing DDP yoga and a few other things, but recently is like a big push towards the last month to go before my birthday. I've decided to do 30 or a month in a row, basically from May 13th to June 13th in a row. And the body's not used to doing that many days. It's used to having a day off once in a while.
I hear ya. I completely, I get that for sure. There was a time there where, a while ago, where I was like going down to metal school like every day.
Yeah.
And I like pulled a muscle in my groin or something. And I think it was like Vince Austin was like, no, you need to take a day off every once in a while, Kyle, and just let yourself heal there.
Heal.
So, yeah. I mean, especially like, I mean, I'm not trying to bag on you, but like, yeah, I'm wrestling training is a bit more intense than yoga.
Oh, no, I know, man. I know. I've been there before. I had just clotheslined me once and I flew out the other side of the ring. So.
Jeez.
I didn't know better. I didn't know, like, this is me just learning, right? So I didn't know to bump, or at least I knew to bump, but I didn't, you know, in the moment think about it. And he took my effing head off. So it's intense. And I couldn't imagine doing that, like, day in, day out, every day. I mean, there's guys like, you know, Metal, he has a school, the academy, even during the pandemic, he's still there every day. But even back in the day when I trained, I didn't do every day.
Yeah, no, he like all the props in the world to Metal. He is completely like I saw an old picture from the first one-on-one match that I had with him. I saw it today, and I was like, wow, like the way Metal looks now to the way he used to look, like even during that match, it's like night and day.
Oh yeah, I messaged him on one of his pictures on Instagram. We got to talking, and I was like I said to him, like, I haven't seen you thin since the day I walked into MPW and watched a very young face painted heavy metal wrestle in the MPW ring. Like, this is within his first few years of wrestling. I hadn't seen him that thin since then. He agreed. He's like, no, I haven't been in this great of shape since back in that day, if not, like, I mean, better shape now. And I'm super proud and happy for him. And, like, to totally go off on a side thing here. While we're talking about the school, I've expressed interest. I've talked to him. I've talked to a couple of people that, like, I'm even at a point now where I kind of want to get down there, because, like, you watch guys like you, and you watch Taryn, you watch Zoe, and everybody working there, and it's almost like the atmosphere after going there and filming the clandestine act two, and actually getting to feel what it's like in there, and like the camaraderie and everybody working together, like it's mind blowing. Like I it's not that I didn't have faith in metal, I just never knew him to, you know, start a school, but to see what it's become and the work he's put into it, and the community, everybody within that, the students, from his like new students to people that are, you know, wrestling for various companies in town, is just amazing. Like, I didn't think we'd ever have that in Edmonton. So yeah,
it's a godsend for sure. Like it's definitely been something, that's helped me out. Like, I mean, I don't think that it's any secret to anyone. Like, I was not ready to be in the ring when I was first put in the ring. I don't think that's really something that anyone would dispute. But, you know, like, I think now, with the fact that I've gone through, you know, like, a number of months of training under MRB over at Force, and then continued it under Metal and MRB at Top Talent, I think people are kind of turning around and
you won the Act One of Clandestine Cluster Tribute. Like you were the winner of that cluster of people that battled it out in the ring.
I have defeated more people in Clandestine than anyone.
Exactly, and Dr. Kyoto almost died, and you came out on top.
That was a really fun night, and I felt super bummed that I missed the second Clandestine show. We were training before the but we were training like a few days before, maybe a week before, I don't know. And I took a move and then just like got up and heard all these popping and cracking going on in my ribs. I was like, oh, that's not good. Oh. It was O'Connor roll, right? So pop, yeah. Crack, just as I'm doing this. And then I got up and I was like, okay. Then I took an arm drag. It was like crack, crack, pop, pop again.
Oof.
And then I was like, oh. And then everybody was like, hey, are you okay? And Chucky was like, hey, go get some water there, Goose. So I went to the bathroom and I just like raised my leg up and it was like pop, pop, crack, crack. I was like, uh-oh, that's not good.
What was the diagnosis?
They told me that they sent, like, because I immediately went to like clinic to get a checkup.
Yeah.
Because I was like, yeah, okay, I've broken a rib or something here, right? And they sent me for x-rays. It said there was no broken bones, but they didn't expect to find anything because they said it was most likely a cartilage issue, which wouldn't show up in the x-ray.
Yeah.
And then I had speaking of Clandestine Society, Thomas, good fella who does rehabilitation for folks.
With Pinnacle Therapy.
Yeah, yeah. He actually came to my house and took a look at me, and I found out that day that they were taping the Clandestine Society, and that's how I found out. And I was like, oh, well, that's a huge bummer. But yeah, after that, he told me how much longer I needed to wait before I got back in the ring, and so I did that, and then, I went back as soon as I was able to, you know, with all the restrictions and then everything that's been going on. It's been rough to stay consistent this year, for sure.
Yeah, no, I feel for everyone. Like, it's been a tick for me since I actually done my ring training, and that's why I said, like, you know, I'm kind of reached a point where I'm like, I need to give this one more go, or just do it. Like, you know, you look at, like I said, it's the atmosphere. You look at everybody working together, just doing the warm-ups and stuff. And it's like, if I could show up to do that a few times a week too, even.
It will whip you into shape.
Yeah, well, no, I've seen the shape you've been whipped into and others there. So, but it's a toll on the body. It's a lot of work. And then right now, you know, everybody wants to wrestle, everybody wants to train, but we can't. We're getting there. We were there, and then, you know, Alberta took a step back, so. Yeah. But, there'll be other clandestines, and there'll be other shows, you know, where we see the light at the end of the tunnel now, I hope, so.
Yeah. And I am very hopeful that I am allowed to be a part of the next clandestine show. Because, like, even last night I watched the brand new Archer report you put out. And I was like, oh, I'm so sad I didn't get to be a part of this.
You know? Yeah. Like, oh, that Archer.
I love being a part of, like, the Archer reports, like, back when mm-hmm. you were still with RCW. And we'll get there.
Yeah.
You had a point to make. Let's start with your point, and then we will go back a bit and talk about
just that Archer report. So, you know, obviously it was like our first time filming clandestine at Top Talent Academy. And then I was showing up, I wasn't late. I was, you know, right on time, but I was showing up later than I like. I'm a guy that likes to be there a bit early. And then we got to talking, and then Metal asked my assistance with catering because, you know, I happen to know some amazing small businesses around town. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, heavy metal spares no time for something special. This is why I had to make the riders for him all the time in RCW. Come on, this is heavy fucking metal. But anyways, yeah, so he got some food. We worked on that together. And so that took my time. And then I offered to go get the food because obviously I know the people. So I went and got it and said hi to people and brought it back. And that whole time killed all my prep time for setting up for the Archer report. So by that time we were ready to go live. And so I kind of had to like make things work on the fly. Then I found out some of my audio equipment, cable wasn't working, like an audio breakout box that sets up my camera to the shotgun mic. And so it was just like this mad panic to try to get some footage. And I wanted it to be a little more seamless, maybe do a few Archer reports, you know, like per episode of the act two. Yeah, but we kind of took all that we had and smushed it together in one. And in retrospect, it was, as it was pointed out to me by Gavin, we were coming up to episode 99. And obviously 100 is a big milestone. And I've had a lot of different ideas, a sort of cohesive idea of a lot of different things for episode 100. And I've worked on with Gavin, and we've been sort of talking about and trying to work on with people for actually like before the pandemic. And so it was like, well, we can't make, you know, we could make three small episodes, but let's make one episode, call it the Clandestine Act Two episode. And then we have 100 in front of us, and now we focus on tackling on that, which is a whole other thing. The stuff my brain comes up with just isn't feasible in reality half the time, or I need $1 million.
I think that's one of the wonders of the Archer report. Like I even remember, like, when you first you asked me to do some Archer reports back in Calgary. And I would come up with all these wild ideas, and I would send them to you, and you'd be like, "Kyle, we don't have people to play these parts, and we don't have resources,
budget. Yeah, like we don't have the budget.
I have like car chases and everything. Like,
yeah, no, you went like full cinematic, and I'm like, I respect and admire that, but dude, this is what we have to work with. Like you and I filmed Weekend at Thad's, the Weekend at Bernie ripoff, and like 20 minutes as they were screaming for us to shut down the venue, and on like in shoestring whatever budget. Right. So it's you just kind of have to make do with what you have. And then, of course, being 100 and having these ideas and very much in the vein of the ideas you are giving me is what I want. And so that's where I have to meet in the middle and say, what can we do? What can't we do? What could we do on a budget? And of course, Gavin has a million different ideas, too. Him and I are horrible. We're amazing together, but we're horrible together. And so we have all this stuff, but it's just sitting right now, of course, due to the pandemic and not being around people, and to not go into it too far. Archer Report isn't going to be based off of any one show or any one company. Archer Report 100, it's a tribute to everything that was and is and has been the Archer Report. So it's going to take us a little time to put it together, because I would literally want to get anybody and everybody that wants to be a part of it, and the over encompassing theme to it, I want anybody and everybody, RCW, MPW, CWE, PWA, clandestine, anything. And maybe, you know, like, well, looking at everything and shows not happening right now, is we're going to have to actually take time with Gavin and I and maybe meet some of these people outside of things, or when the Academy can start going up, do something there. But yeah, I just want it to be kind of the fun look, not look back. It's not going to be, you know, like a retrospective by any means, but just a, just sort of like a fun one-off celebration of the fact that we actually made 100 episodes on this ridiculous little weird wrestling YouTube show.
That is awesome. I mean, I don't know, like, I'm not trying to get myself booked here, but I would very much love to be a part of that if that's...
Oh, you're booked, my friend. Oh, you're booked. Okay. You might have to... We might have to do a call back to the old ring announcer, Kyle, and then maybe we'll work our way to the goose. But
solid.
There was a sequel to Weekend at Bernie's, so that's always an option. But we can talk about that later.
You know, I don't even think I've actually seen the real movie Weekend at Bernie's. Which
you haven't?
No.
Come on, you're a movie buff. You're the movie guy.
It's weird, eh?
And so you haven't seen two then?
I haven't seen either of them.
Yeah, no, it's...
I mean, wouldn't he had been, like, decomposed by the second movie? Like...
So the second movie involves voodoo, oh. Not to spoil it too much for you. So that's where you can kind of play with things a little bit when you involve magic, right?
Okay.
So...
Yeah, you can do things like switch bodies.
yeah, with haunted Scott Steiner toys and...
Anyway, just for anyone that doesn't have any clue what we are talking about, why don't you explain what the Archer Report is, how you came up with the idea, and give us those details.
So the Archer Report is, by one point in time, was a weekly or at least monthly YouTube show. And so basically every time there was a wrestling show that I was a part of, me and Gavin, my cameraman, and anyone involved in the show would basically just tell the story behind the scenes. A good chunk of it's interviews, you know, discussing the storylines or discussing what's happening, discussing what just happened. And then maybe there's some extra story that we can kind of do little offshoot side things. Then me personally, I didn't want it to be your canned wrestling promo clip show or anything like that. I wanted to have like some fun and levity to it. And for me, I've said this many times before, but I always kind of look towards Marvel movies, kind of have that market cornered for that, you know, full encompassing telling of a story where they have the drama, they have the action, and then they have comedy. And so we occasionally have little comedy skits or little comedy things, and it's just this kind of mix of all the different characters. And the great thing about it is local wrestling shows don't, for the most part, I know CWE is starting up on TV in Winnipeg, but they don't have TV, they don't have a weekly show. So you go to a show 1 month and then you might not make the other month. Well, you've missed a whole whack of story before you make the next month. Well, Archer Report is there to kind of be the TV or be it just there to tell the story of what you might have missed or to tell more of the story of the show you went and saw. And so, yeah, it kind of started, I'm going to bring that bastard up again, but Heavy Metal, at the time I was kind of in between clients managing, and I kind of reached a stalemate of what I really wanted to do in wrestling. And they were doing a war for top talent, had come back to RCW, which no one thought would ever happen after they left. And they were having a war for the company, and he's like, well, why don't you be a war correspondent and do some backstage videos? And I thought, oh, this is something to do to kill the time, and it's a challenge, and I'm always up for a challenge. So I started doing just simple videos that I'd post to YouTube, or not YouTube, mind you, sorry, Facebook. And we did these sort of little things to tell the story. And then at one point in time, I realized, like, we can take all this and put it together and make a little show and make that TV that we don't have. So I decided to move it to YouTube, and we've had it on YouTube, obviously, now for 99 episodes. Through my time, I've now went and during the pandemic switched it from or split it up so there's season one and season two. Season one episodes 1 to 50 is with RCW, and season two episodes 51 through 99 is with PWA. Obviously, throughout that there is some CWE episodes and a clandestine episode. So, and yeah, it's just a way for people to get to know the characters a little more. Not every wrestler gets a promo in the ring every show. You know that. And so this is a way for people to get to know, especially when there's new, like my favorite thing about the Archer Report is always grabbing someone brand new and just teaching them the art of the promo or learning who their character is, fleshing out their character. And that introduces it to the fans.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was just a way to get some more content out there. It became over-encompassing for me. We had so much fun with it in RCW. I kept it going PWA, and I literally work all night long doing it. I don't get a break to sit down and chat much, because if I'm not doing stuff out in the ringside, I'm doing the Archer Report. But I love it. It's my way of giving back to the business, because it gives a chance for, like I said, people to shine, people to tell more of their story of who their character is to the fans. So.
Yeah, 100%. And like I say, you actually had me host some episodes. Can you tell me about, like, what led you to make that decision?
So I'm a busy family man, and the biggest thing is I pride myself on being a dad above anything else, a husband and a father. And my one daughter we have every other week, and I can't make a lot of out of town shows if they fall in her week, because if I miss a week with her, like I miss a whole Saturday with her, that's only one of my two Saturdays out of a whole month.
Yeah.
So it was just increasingly harder for me to make out of town shows. And actually, probably since you had joined RCW at the time, I wasn't doing much of any out of town shows, just because of my job, because of my family. And so I kind of wanted to, we're doing regular shows in Edmonton, we're doing regular shows in Calgary, and there's all these great things happening in Calgary. And I'm like, I want to tell that story, but I just can't make it down. And you had been helping, or you'd been on the Archer Report. We've been having fun working together. I loved our relationship, how we worked on the Archer Report. And I was just like, well, Kyle can do it, like, as long as you can film it. And I proposed it to you. I'm like, do you think you'd like to do this? And of course, you, knowing you, you hopped right on top of it and knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, it was definitely fun, and I saw it as kind of like one of like my breakout opportunities to kind of show that I have like some creative juices flowing around in my brains and stuff.
Well, and that was the biggest thing of why I wanted to do it, is I talked to you a lot, and I got to know Kyle, and I'm like, Kyle, he knows this, and we're both movie buffs. So we both know like cinema and TV shows and stuff like that. And I know you have your head for that. And then you have your improv, that you've done. And I'm like, Kyle has this all in the bag. And I just thought to myself, I'm like, yeah, I'm not there to direct or to instruct, but you said, you message me and bounce things back and forth. And I'm like, this gives you a chance. Like, I was like, in my mind, I'm like, this gives Kyle a chance to kind of open up and do some stuff. And you came up with like the whole, metal doing, Sharon Stone, Fatal Attraction?
Yeah.
No, Basic Instinct. Like, that was probably one, if not one of the greatest Archer Reports. I had nothing to do with it. That was all you.
I think that might have been Metal's idea.
You know how the Archer Report is, and most people won't know. It's collaborative. Yeah. So if you've ever worked on something with like a group of people, how you input things and how magic starts to happen. And that's how things were between you and I, and even myself and you and Metal, who is a superstar of that Archer Reports with RCW at that time, because here he was helping coach along, so he'd bounce ideas whoever you're working with at the time, or sometimes Metal would be peeking around the corner and listening and then hop in and bounce ideas, and you'd work together, like you'd input little things, and this would work, and oh no, that won't work, oh this will work, and oh, and everybody's all of a sudden, everyone's going, yeah, okay, let's film this. And so it wasn't, it was obviously might have been his idea, but you guys all worked together to come up with that scene. So
yeah, it was a really good, and like one of the things I do kind of like looking back like about my time being a part of it was that like the first couple episodes, like I completely scripted those out, and I made sure to tell you like, hey, I don't expect anyone to memorize lines or anything like that.
Yeah.
But like, this is, these are my ideas, and like I completely like sent you off like full on scripts. And then by the time
you did,
I had done it like a couple of times, like two or three or four times, it was like, okay, well, I'll be riding on the way to the show in the back of Vic's RV there and just coming up with ideas in my head. And like, you formed that trust in me that you didn't really need me to send you like my ideas anymore. I just send you what I shot, and then you'd make the best of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and once, like, the biggest thing about the Archer Report, I always say, is it's a logistical nightmare
to put it together.
It's a logistical nightmare, but it's how I work. You've seen me work, and maybe, I've gotten more comfortable with it over time, but I don't like to script anything. Like, I don't, I, so I, everybody's different. So you know how people come together with matches and some people go over the entire thing and some people call it in the ring.
Yeah.
And when it comes to promos, I cannot script. My worst promos are my scripted promos. If I script anything or I try to go word for word, I'm hooped. Like, I'd be hooped in the WWE if someone handed me a script and say this, because I need it to come out naturally and on the fly. You have your bullet points and you go out there and do it, like calling it in the ring, right?
Yeah.
And so the Archer Report kind of took on that because it was my creation. I took on that and it was my way to challenge. Like, a lot of people would want to script their promos, especially newer, greener people.
Yeah.
And I'd say, no, you're going to follow me and let's go. And it's still to this day, that's how it is. Ava Lawless, I remember her kind of being nervous because she's only done a handful of actual matches. She's done a whole lot of training with MRB.
I saw her, but
but she didn't do a lot of dialogue in that, and she's still fleshing out her character because she's been training and only had so many matches, right? And
yeah,
so
I
remember her.
Sorry, yeah. I was just saying the clandestine is probably like her first match, and then this clandestine second one is probably her like second, third, and fourth match. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. And she was nervous and I'm like, no, let's just take this and go. You may not have a one take wonder. You do a few takes, but then you realize your cadence and how things work. And so that's how Arch Report is. And I'm glad to hear that, like, you eventually just got comfortable with just doing stuff on the fly, because that's just how, I don't know, it's my modus operandi for the Archer Report is like, let's just do it on the fly and make it. Cause if you can get that one take wonder and it's just natural and organic, there's so much magic to it. Like, there's no missed beats. There's no, even if there's a stuttered word sometimes, it doesn't matter because it just feels real. It feels legitimate. It feels genuine, right?
Yeah.
And so it's been always, I'm glad to hear that you went that way, because that's always been my push, is just let it all come out natural. Just don't plan, just go. ideas.
I would come up with like sort of like a loose idea in my head, but I also knew once I got to the show, I had to ask the people if they wanted to do it. I had to find
a good time for
them to want to do it, you know? And then like, yeah, it's just, and then like you say, I had an improv background, so I was more comfortable doing it improv than I would be like scripted anyway. Like,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, but when not to change the subject too much, but like when you say trying to get people to do it, like that's the real pain of the Arch Report is, and you know, is trying to chase down a room full of kitten wrestlers and, you know, basically get them into one spot to film things, because wrestlers don't like to do it before their match, and sometimes they don't like to do it after the match, and they're going over everything, they're talking with the boys, and you're just constantly like, now, and then all of a sudden you'll have no one and you're standing there fuming like, okay, I want to get some stuff done, and then you'll have a lineup of like 10 people at the door saying, okay, let's film. And
yeah.
So that's my constant battle, and it's led to me many times to me saying, why am I doing this? But like I said, it's just giving back and
it's
having fun, right?
Like, if you ever watch like the episodes that I was part of, you will notice that there's a lot of people that are sort of on the periphery of wrestling who are not the actual wrestlers. And that's because it's so much easier to get them to agree to just do something with you.
Yeah, as opposed to like a wrestler that's going over his match that's upcoming, or that's stretching before his match that's upcoming, or that's sore after his match that he just had, or that's going over, you know, with a veteran, the match they just had. And so, yeah, there's so many, but that's, you know, it's, you want to catch it in that moment there. You don't want to catch him out on the street. Occasionally there's obvious little side things that you would do that for, but it's, you want to catch him at the show, and it's just tough. You know, like in the WWE, you have to, they'll tell you right now, let's do a promo and let's go. But at an indie level, not everybody gets that. And that's why I try to do the Arch Report, to stress on, like, if you get signed one day, guess what you're going to have to do?
Yeah.
You're gonna have to go do a presser, and then you're gonna have to go do your workout, and then you're gonna have to go over your match, and they're gonna say, no, let's pull you aside and do five promos for five different things, and then go back and get ready for your match. And it's not like I'm trying to groom people for WWE, but I'm trying to get them to understand you need to be the full package of being able to do anything at any point at any time and knock it out of the park. So
like, it is easier to get people to care about your character if you're able to communicate with them by telling, like, talking in front of them, you know? Like,
yeah, but not everybody gets that. And older veterans, you know, they've done that and been there. And so, yeah, it's, certain people are a pain, and then certain people just need a lot more direction than the improvisational route. And so you kind of hit a wall with them. They're like, you know, because every month or, you know, every weekly show, or you don't want to do the same canned promo with someone, but it's hard to tell a veteran, like, can you do something different? Because that's what's worked for them for years. And there's no disrespect to that, but we got to switch it up a little bit because we want it to be engaging to the people constantly watching. So.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I would definitely give, like, Metal a lot of credit for, because he was always pretty much down to do it, you know?
Oh, and, man, I you probably wake him up in the morning and be ready to do it. And that's the sign of a true professional. MRB is the same way. Working with MRB and PWA, I can literally ask him, I could ask him, like, we could film a promo 60 seconds before he has to go out through the curtain, and he will film, like, 55 seconds of that and then go out and just kill it in the ring. And that's, like I said, that's just a sign of a true professional. There's the whole handful of other people that I admire and respect so much for being those people that are like my go-tos, that you can say, hey, let's do something now. And for the most part, barring something strange, they're ready to do it right then and there. And that's, you know, if I could have the entire roster like that, that'd be great. But you have to work with people and meet middle ground. So
100%. And I totally, like, once again, I agree with your whole thing about, like, if somebody handed you a script. Like, I know, like, I've cut a lot of promos in RCW, like, even, mm-hmm. like, after becoming, like, the Canadian Goose and just going out to the ring and talking. And, like, literally no one has ever given me a script. Or, you know, it's very, very loose bullet points, if anything. And there's even been occasions where, like, you'll go out to the ring and you're just feeling it, and you'll just, like, take the microphone and start talking, you know?
Well, yeah, there's sometimes, like, I've gone out, I went out to the, I interrupted Squig's mother's 10 bell salute at her memorial show.
Classy.
Yes. Yeah. And we had a whole back and forth, and this was a big build up to, you know, during the time where him and I were going, like, I was a general manager, he was the owner, and we were going back and forth, and we had everything sort of figured out, and he's probably one more to script a little what he's gonna say, and we had all this figured out, and I got so much heat for interrupting that 10 bell alone. Like, people were just screaming and losing it, and, like, you could not hear yourself cough, like, you couldn't hear anything. And I'm there with a mic, and I'm like, if we do the pass back and forth, it's not gonna work with this much energy and this much how loud the crowd is. So I kept the microphone to myself, completely changed the whole thing on the fly, just because the whole heat was on me. That was the whole moment. And I just basically, it wasn't to soak it in for my case, but had it got disjointed, it would have lost all that. And we wanted to keep that. And so I only gave it to him right at the end so he could say his piece. And keeping it away from him, you know, kept people more, even more upset and excited. And so you have to know to read that crowd when you're out there and realize, okay, all this I have. That's why scripts for me just don't work. Or I don't understand how they work in a company, because things can change. The crowd can change. The crowd can be sitting on their hands. The crowd can be losing their mind. And you have to change accordingly.
Was Squig hot about you changing the
plan? He kind of gave me, oh, I was supposed to say something out there, and I was like, yeah, but you, I had to explain it to him, like, you see how they were, and they, so you got your, like, last word at the end. Once I explained it to him, he understood, oh, okay, like, you know, I see where you were coming from. You weren't trying to showboat, or what's the word he likes to use, make a name for going to business for yourself or something. And I was like, no, this was basically reading the crowd and realizing, like, if we back and forth, you would have lost all that. Like, everybody would have died down to hear us. But having me say everything and make people more and more upset, and then you get your little bit in at the end, that's what made that moment, right? And
yeah. 100%.
He got it, but he gave me hell at first. Oh, why'd you do that? And I've got that a lot from people, like Mr. going into business for himself. I remember when Kurt hired me, or was going to hire me over to PWA, he had said, first thing he thought about me is that he saw this guy and everything I do, and he goes, oh, this guy's just going into business for himself. And I'm like, no, like, I'm passionate. I'm passionate, and I want to do the best that I can, and I want to do the best for everybody else also in return. So sometimes that can be construed as I'm just trying to go into business for myself, but really, as the manager, I'm never going into business for myself. I'm always shining the other people, right? like you've seen me be a manager at ringside. I don't make it about me.
Yeah.
it's about the, and I always say, like, that's how I am in life. Like, I've become my gimmick is with the small business stuff I do and helping the community stuff is I'm just there. I'm there to shine for everything else. I am the support for everything else. And then in my family life and my kids, I'm the support. I am there. And it's like, yeah, I may shine because I'm always talking and hyping and doing things, but it's me doing it for everybody else, you know, as a, for the greater good sort of thing. So,
I mean, I can definitely tell you firsthand that I have been in the ring with Squig and he has changed the plan on the fly on numerous occasions.
So there.
We even did, like, when we did the Baconator match.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And at the end of it, like, he wanted me to shake his hand. And and I just was like, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Hey, Edmonton, should I shake his hand? And they're all like, no.
Of course not, yeah.
And he's like, Kyle, shake my hand, show respect. And I was like, what do you say? Should I give him one more chance? And they're all like, no. And I was just like, okay. And then I beat him up with the Singapore cane. And went to the back and was like, I'm sorry. It just didn't make sense to me.
Sorry, man. The crowd made the decision. The crowd booked this.
Well, like, kind of. And, like, he was totally fine with it. He was like, yeah, you made the right call. You know?
No, and that's, we all realize, like, whereas he's maybe changed things. Like, Squig's, for as much hell as they give him, he's been in the business long enough to know, at least have, you know, like, a mind about himself to know at certain periods that things need to change to work, right? Mm-hmm. And vice versa, he realizes, you know, just once you explain it to him is, okay, this is what's happening. And that's how you kind of have to be in wrestling. Like, you have to take the good with the bad and take your criticism and mouth shut and ears open kind of thing. And you just got to ebb and flow, change as things go. So,
yeah, 100%. And, like, I really appreciated it because I was like, well, I hope I don't get in trouble for this as I was walking back to the curtain. But
it's better to ask forgiveness than to ask permission.
Well, that was kind of part of it for sure. And I mean, like, that whole ending got a little, you know, thrown out of whack. Like, I was not supposed to get beat up by Dead Zone and Vince Austin at the end there, and they just started beating me up until I legitimately started fighting them back and was like, hey, this is not the plan, boys. Yeah,
sometimes it, you know, it's quite funny in a lot of ways. I miss the chaos that is RCW, and even Steven will, Squig will admit it sometimes on a rare occasion that it is this sort of Wild West chaotic environment. And it's not necessarily bad all the time. The environment can be a little weird sometimes, but I sometimes miss that, being able to just really do anything. Now, doesn't necessarily always make sense and work well for long-term storylines, but there's a bit of, like I always say, it's the Wild West. Like, there's a bit of nutsness to it that is sometimes admirable and sometimes you just shake your head at. So,
I mean, that's fair. I don't, like, I would not describe any, like, anything as, like, bad, but
just sometimes things go too long.
Yeah, right? Just
things, there's,
sorry, it's just the way wrestling is, kind of, you know.
Yep.
And then it's just not super structured.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing, is having worked for, you know, a handful of different companies, is just seeing how structure works between different companies. And I mean, literally no company is perfect. The closest I've seen to that is Clandestine. And PWA actually is quite, like, it's funny to watch people enter PWA since I'd been there. And I noticed on my first day the professionalism, and not to say, like, any other place is less professional, but just to see, like, a completely different environment. And that works for them. That's how it works. And what RCW has works for them. But, like, it's every place is different. Every person's different, right? But every place is different, and every promoter runs it a different way. And even from PWA to Clandestine are different, even though there's some similarities, they're still different, right? So it's, every place is different, but in some ways, you know, like I said, I miss RCW for going back to the Arch Report, some of the crazy stuff we were able to just throw against the wall. Whereas, you know, Kurt would watch my Arch Reports and say, hey, this really doesn't fit what we have. And that's how he works. That's fine. But it's like, oh man, they're, you know how hard it is to get footage, you know how hard it is to get content at a show. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, there goes, if I knock a couple out, like there goes a chunk of one of my episodes, right? So it's just each different place is different. You got to kind of take it as it goes. And
yeah, 100%. I've never you know, been backstage or wrestled at a PWA show. I did do the one clandestine show, and it was a very different environment than ours. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that
yeah, we got to get you on the CWE show one of these days.
I would love to do a CWE show.
Danny Abigail Duggan, if you're listening to this, book this mother effer right now. I'll give him a hard time because I think you would. I would enjoy you being on the CWE show because it's a real schmoz of all kinds of different people. It's the people that's on the road with CWE, and then it's literally people from all the different companies, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just think you would, it'd be a great experience for you. And I think you'd fit in well, putting on a show at CWE.
I definitely appreciate you, putting in a good word for me. You know, I've done a couple of, announcing gigs for, CWE.
Yeah. I thought you'd had something to do with them. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense now.
I mean, the last one I did was, there was a bunch of like road issues. You know, so I was.
Oh, that's always
fun. I've kind of been wondering if maybe they are hot at me for, you know, the road issues that took place or whatever. But I mean, I've had nice conversations with AJ since, and like they didn't express any ill will or anything. So
you look past that stuff. Every tour, I'm obviously not the guy that's been on a full tour. I do, you know, one or two shows, so I can't talk, but I hear the stories from AJ. I hear the stories from Danny. I hear stories from, you know, Jacob Creed and the other guys driving the trucks. And it's like every show is going to have its stuff. But once it's all said and done, you kind of wrap it in a nice little bow and move on from it. So,
yeah.
And I know Danny is chomping at the bit to get back out to Alberta. He literally texts me probably once every couple weeks or a month, like, any news? What's going on in Alberta? Are we good to go yet?
Yeah, and I would definitely suspect that if, you know, Danny had heat about anything involving that,
he'd tell you
it was be with Brutus the Barber Beefcake and not with the guy that ring announced. You know,
so, yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, even though I ended up showing up for that show like 4 minutes before bell time in Red Deer because we had got a speeding ticket and stuff, like I still went to the ring and you know,
did your job.
Did my job fine. Like I had people walking up to me like Justin Locke, and he was like, "Holy shit, you're a really good announcer." You know? And I was like, "Oh, well, thank you. You know, I appreciate that. I'm glad I did a good job tonight and, you know, didn't look like a complete idiot cuz like I we definitely were
a little
not
stressed.
On time.
Yeah. Hey, it's better. I got one for you that's way, way worse. So, and I will tell a little story here. I don't think I've ever told this on the podcast, but okay. I was a ring announcer for RCW when I first started. Like, that's how I got my foot in the business, per se. And we had Tatanka and Viscera up for a handful of days. And we were doing Edmonton, obviously. I don't think we were doing Calgary at the time, but we were doing a handful of reserves so that Tatanka could go meet the kids, sit down with them and basically, you know, do an anti-bullying talk and then just, you know, explain, you know, motivate the kids and talk to them kind of thing. And so we were going, it was out by Cold Lake. I don't know the name of the reserve, but it was me, Slammer, Vince Austin, Hawks, and Ugg in Slammer's old little white neon.
All and the guys so you want on an anti-bullying, anti-drug.
Yeah, we were the best. Yeah, nonetheless. We were one of the cars heading up there, and we were actually following, Squig, who had Viscera, and I can't remember who else with him. And at one point in time, you know, like Hawks looks at me and goes, okay, I'm sitting there squished in between Vince Austin and Ugg in this back seat. And he looks at me and goes, okay, this is where we're going. You need to find it on your Google. And I'm on my iPhone, like trying to Google map it. And I'm like, okay, I think I got the directions. So we're following these directions and we see all of a sudden Squig's car parked on the side of the road. And he's walking out of the forest with a giant roll of gas station toilet paper, like the big roll of gas station toilet paper. So he obviously just taking a dump. And we think, okay, well, you know, it's been a bit on the road here. We got to take a piss. Let's go up over the hill there. take a piss. And when Squig obviously goes forward and comes past us, we'll moon him. So we all get out of the car, we take our pisses, and we see him coming up over the hill, and we're like, okay, everybody get ready. And all of us drop trow and moon him. And then he keeps going, and we keep going, and we're following. And all of a sudden, like, these Google directions are leading us down this, like, gravel road. And then it's literally leading us down, like, it's nothing of much of a semblance of a road other than, like, so, literally, yeah, like, through, like, the forest on, like, these, like, tracks. And all of a sudden, like, Hawk stops and he's like, we're lost, man. Like, and I don't know where Squig went, but we're lost. Like, screw this. We're stopping here and we're going to figure this out. And we realize, like, Google can be sometimes, it had bad directions. So we're trying to figure that out on the phone. And meanwhile, I got Vince in the back seat with a messed up sciatica, and he's yelling at these deer because he's in pain and pulling, like, a Vince Austin shoot promo on these deers, how he wants to spit in their big baby doe eyes. And so we're sitting here listening to Vince rant and trying to figure out where we're supposed to go. And here comes Squig from up ahead. And obviously he's turned around because he realized, like, we're going into middle of nowhere on not much of a road. And he pulls up to us and the passenger side rolls down and there's Viscera. You know, Mabel of Men on a Mission, Big Daddy V, Viscera. And we're like, oh, hey, Vince, how you doing? Good to see you. And we're like, welcome to Canada. And he's like, yeah, the great white north. He's like, I saw all your asses back there. It's real white up here. And so we basically, not moon just Squig, but we moon Viscera. And so anyways, pretty much. And so, you know, we're kind of all laughing nervously, and Squig says he has someone at the venue, I think it was Metal or Jess, on the phone, and they're going to give us the right directions to get there. So we follow Squig to get there, and we got there at intermission. I am the ring announcer, and I've got there at intermission. Here, like, half the card, well, not half the card, but, you know, full car, like, basically had to change card on the fly, make things work in matches in the undercard, just so we can make things work later on with all the people we had in our car. And then I took over for ring announcing duty for the last half and went from there. So if you think getting there 5 minutes before is bad, I got there at intermission.
Yeah, that would be far worse.
I felt so embarrassed, like...
I've definitely, like, tagged in and finished announcing a show or two for Squig back when, like, Alex was with us and Dixon.
Oh, yeah.
And he was announcing, but, you know, he was kind of rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. And so the opportunities were given to more capable fans.
He was well known for his little freakouts too. So, yeah, that was... he was a difficult guy to work with.
Yes, he definitely was.
And I was very happy when you took over for him, because I was being, like, I always took it as a, I don't know, point of pride. I really worked hard when I was a ring announcer. I remember Wavell Star, when I first became a manager, he goes, what are you doing? He's like, you're one of the best ring announcers I've known in Canada. And he's like, why are you throwing this away to be a manager? He's like, stupid. You're an amazing ring announcer. You should do this. And I'm like, I got something I just want to try here. Like, bear with me, Wavell. And he kind of rolled his eyes at it, but I took pride in what I did. And so every ring announcer that came in after me, I try to, like, work with a little. And I meet an Andre Corbiel, and it would be an absolute train wreck. And he wouldn't listen to me. And then he'd go out there and screw things up. And that's been well documented. And then there'd be people like Alex. And so I was so happy when someone like you, who took pride in what he did and worked hard, finally took over. And it was just like, oh, it was like a sigh of relief. Because ring announcer is a very important thing to have. You look at What About Ivan and PWA. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very integral, because at an indie show, your ring announcer isn't just a ring announcer Howard Finkel style. He's MC.
Yeah.
He's keeping the show going. He's talking about the sponsors. He's keeping the crowd hyped. And it's not necessarily an easy thing to do. So it was great to have you take over, because it was like, finally I can say there's someone that I felt was up to my level when I was a ring announcer.
Yeah, I've always said that, like, the ring announcer has two jobs, basically. One is to convey information, and the other is to get people hyped up to have a good time.
Yeah. You know?
And it's very hard to, like, be an effective ring announcer if you're, like, standing there in the ring with your cue card up in front of your face, and you're just, like, reading it verbatim off the card, you know? Like, you gotta, like, let your emotions get into it, and, like... You know,
you have to get the crowd excited.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you are prepping them up. You are priming them for, it's the same with, like, I think it was a Tonight Show and stuff like that, where they'd have, when they were black, be like their dark match, they'd have a stand-up comedian go out, and it basically, they called it warming up the crowd. And that's what you're doing for the guys that are coming out to wrestle, is you're warming up the crowd. You're getting them riled up. You know, like sometimes you get out there and everybody's sort of sitting on their hands, and you got to get them riled up and ready for the first match and the second match. And, you know, sometimes the show goes late and it's 11 at night and you got to get them riled up for the main event, you know?
Yeah, 100%. So we did mention that you've served as a ring announcer and a manager. I know that you also did some bar wrestling back in the day. Can you talk a little bit about that?
When you asked me if there was things we weren't supposed to talk about before we started recording.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm more than happy to talk about it now. I used to be quite embarrassed about it, because it was funny, when I started in wrestling, there were certain wrestling, like I was still doing the bar wrestling as I was a ring announcer. So I was doing that, which was my company. And then I was working for RCW, and I had some wrestlers out to it thinking, you know, I was proud of what I was doing at the time. We weren't trained really. We were trained a bit by a guy that had trained with the Hearts for a bit, and he wrestled some in Can-Am, but he hadn't wrestled for years. And so, yeah, it was, I got ribbed a lot in the beginning because of that. And it was funny because we were doing quite well for ourselves, because the whole premise of it was we would wrestle in between music acts and punk and death metal venues. So you'd have a venue where you'd have a concert, you know, like a show going on, and there'd be four or five bands or three or four bands. And basically between each set, when the bands were setting up and tearing down, we come out and do a match right there on the bar floor, using like the pool table or the stage, or
no ring.
Just basically no ring, backyard in the bar is what I was called, backyard in the bar. We called it initially EBW, Edmonton Bar League Wrestling, which then changed to Extreme Brutality Wrestling once we had a, because it was hardcore, essentially. We had to use all those weapons to help us so that we weren't slamming each other on concrete floors.
Yeah.
So you had to use a lot of props, and a lot of weapons, a lot of hardcore stuff. So when we had a Wildcat, which, you know, Wildcat belts, they've made tons of WWE's belts, Impact, all kinds of different companies' belts. They'd only made, I think, the US title for WWE at the time. We had to make a belt for us. And that was when I got to thinking, like, the name was kind of stupid. Let's change EBW to something that matches more of what we do and sounds less weird and regional, like Bar League in Edmonton. So yeah, we had a Wildcat belt, and we were doing quite well for ourselves because of the whole, I just love the idea, and I hope I can facilitate this happening again one day, but in a far more professional aspect, is the idea of kind of like how Lucha Vavoom is, where it's a wrestling show, but you have burlesque, you have comedians, you have bands, and in a lot of ways, like when you watch Lucha Underground, how they had like a house band or different house bands.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of mix of everything. So it has a little bit of everything to bring people to the party, so to say. And that's what we were, is, you know, and especially because punks and metalheads, they're going to gravitate towards wrestling anyways, because, you know, mosh pits are essentially a wrestling match. And so, yeah, we were doing well. We had full houses, and it was the ring announcer from RCW actually came out and saw me. I was doing a character where I was doing a ripoff of like Road Dogg meets Mr. Anderson or Kennedy, where I was introducing myself.
Okay.
And he saw me do that. And actually, and it was funny because the whole thing about that at the time, which isn't a thing now, you had to have a license.
Oh, okay.
to run a wrestling show.
Okay.
In Edmonton, because it was ran by ECC, yeah. The Edmonton Combative Sports Commission.
They shut us down for a little while.
What's that?
The commission shut all wrestling down for a little while.
Yes, the moratorium because of the MMA death of Tim Haig. So at the time, you had to be part of the commission. Well, we were just doing it on our own. So here we were already. The commission wanted to get us, and Kurt and Squig have told me stories, and I've heard everyone from Massive at the time, everybody wanted to get their hands on us, because like, who are these kids doing this? But we kind of changed venues. It was like Fight Club. It was a secret, and you kind of showed up where you were and where it was that night.
The first rule of bar league wrestling is kayfabe the knowledge of bar league wrestling.
Pretty much, yeah. or where we're gonna be, like, yeah. You know, like we'd advertise through our little Facebook page a bit, but it was just more of the time, like a lot of people would say, like, you guys would just show up. And it was like, if they, you know, guys would go to a show thinking, are they going to show up kind of thing. And it got to the point that the commission spoke with the AGLC, because we're obviously working out of bars. And so we had the AGLC and the commission and all these companies trying to get us. And so when that ring announcer for RCW, Charlie Murch, came and grabbed someone and came sent someone to the back to get me, they said, we're looking for the promoter. And I'm in the back going over what's going to happen in the next. I'm agenting the next match, essentially, with two guys. And someone says, someone's looking for the promoter. I'm like, oh, shit, we're busted. Like, this is it. But I came out, and he goes, I look at him funny. He goes, no, this is the story, and I'm with RCW. And he wanted to be a general manager, a commissioner, and move up, basically, within the company, and he needed to find a replacement. I think he was told, you have to find a replacement. He goes, I'd like you to come be a ring announcer if you'd want to. So that was my in out of that. But we kept doing it for a little while. And then I just sort of realized, you know, once I started, I took time before the shows to start doing training in the ring with guys like Metal and Jess and Hawks. And we were, and then we started, me and a couple of guys from EBW started going to Teddy's school. I say with quotation marks because he never really taught there, but other people did. And so in doing the training and working in the ring, you kind of realize how important that is and the professional nature, and how we're kind of spinning in the face of it by doing backyard in a bar. Like, everybody starts their own way. Mick Foley to Kamikaze have all done backyard wrestling, but it was, you know, I just realized now that I'm part of this, I don't need to do that anymore. And the fact that we weren't legal by any means and being chased down. And there was a couple times towards the end where, like, we were really worried the AGLC was there and we didn't do shows that we had planned to do. We were there, everybody was ready. And it just started getting
lucrative?
I got paid like any other act, and that went into the company. So, like, we got the belt and things like that. But I walked away with money with the company. Like, it was lucrative enough that I didn't walk away losing anything I gained. And like I said, a few of us went and trained, and some actually, like, a good handful of us went and trained, and some guys didn't like actual wrestling. Like, once guys start bumping in the ring and realizing how, like, you know what it's like, or running the ropes, how much that is not easy as just getting hit in the head with a giant plastic Noel candle from a Christmas display. And so guys sort of dropped out, and the only two guys that sort of stuck around were, now known as Maxton Flexwell.
Oh, okay.
And Donnie, and I can't remember Maxton Flexwell's when he was a referee in Force and PWA, but basically if you went to Force or PWA and you saw the tall, skinny white dude with the long dreads and the beard, that was Donnie, aka Jack Magnum, aka I can't remember his name as a ref. And then Maxton Flexwell was something Huxtable, but in EBW he was known as the Cosby Kid. Because it seemed like in that company, everything we sort of came out worked organic. And I don't know who called him that. I feel like it was me. Someone said something of like the Cosby Kid, and it just stuck, and that was his name. We had another guy named Electro.
That was in a lot less bad taste back then.
Yes. And we had a guy named Electro Nuts too, who was supposed to be the electrocutioner, but I called him Electro Nuts, and it just sort of stuck. And it was just silly, fun. It was a great group, a great atmosphere. It was like, you know, that whole, and much like Clandestine, or like how ECW was, where it was like all for one, we all work together. Any of those people still to this day would take a bullet for me, and vice versa. So it was a great opportunity. And then, you know, as things went on, Maxton ended up luckily sticking around. So there's that one guy that I sort of started out with that I've been with from all the way from that to now. But yeah, we just realized, I realized that, you know, it's time to shut this down, and I wanted to pursue working for an actual company and going.
And you mentioned you did do some training at Teddy's school there with like Metal and Jess and stuff. Did you ever end up like working any actual matches in Ring of Honor, or not Ring of Honor?
I worked Nigel McGuinness back in 2006. It was a great match. I almost had the title. No,
RCW, sorry.
So I worked, I think, I've worked some matches as Thaddeus, usually like a very much like how Bobby the Brain Heenan manager, or Jim Cornette, like shit heel cower, that kind of stuff. I've worked at a six-man tag or a normal tag or a one-on-one, and most of the time I just get my ass kicked, but I've worked those matches. Outside of that, I only I feel like there was one other tag match I worked, but the only match I remember ever being one-on-one is we were, I think it's now known as Bootscooting Boogie, but it was known as Fandangos. It's on 50th Street with the Queen Donaire in front of it. It's like a club, but it's like a country club type thing. But we were doing Tuesday shows. We call them Tuesday Night Titans or something out of there. And I worked, we were short a person, and I worked barricade under a hood as Mr. Anarchy with my Mr. Anarchy, who was my Mr. Kennedy knockoff from EBW. I worked as him in a match with Barricade. So, and it was a fun little back and forth, and that was my one match. But yeah, I didn't work any other matches under any other gimmick in RCW.
That's hilarious. Like I've always wanted to like have a match with you. I've always thought that would be fun. Like,
well, yeah. I'd love to get back to it. Like, that's part of my reason of recently getting in shape and just realizing like it's been a long time since I've done stuff in the ring. I've taken bumps, but it's been a long time since I've just went out and trained, and like I'd love to do that again. So we'll see, maybe we'll get down to Top Talent and have a training camp match. And
yeah, that would be a good time for sure.
Then we'll get booked for Clandestine or Ring of Honor, either or whatever works.
Awesome, possum brother. Alrighty, well, we are at the 1 hour mark now, so generally this is where we start to wrap things up, but I am gonna I could go all night with you for sure, man. Like I remember the first one we did this, it was like 2.5 hours long because back then I didn't put any kind of like time limit on it. But
yeah,
since I've had
let's Joe Rogan this. Let's go for 4 hours.
But I want to like just ask you like some hypothetical questions. Like, who in Alberta that you've yet to have a chance to manage, would you like to be ringside to for the matches and stuff?
Well, I think I've made it quite obvious over the last year or so. I haven't managed a lot of women. If anything, it was just a one-off. Like, I've never had a long-term anything with any women. And Kayla J, I just feel we could do some... Like, when you look at what she was doing with Force and Clandestine there and where she was going with that, when I saw her change sort of who she was, and she kind of found, she was finding her zone there, and I was like, man, I've never found like one quite heel woman that I really want to work with, but it definitely her on the female aspect of things. And just in general, even if another, Alex Wicker was a little bit related in PWA to the era of Archer. Okay. And there was sort of talk and plans of incorporating her into that faction. And then she left and had other things to do, but that was another one. Now, like Alex Wicker, I would have loved to have worked with her on a more regular basis. My biggest thing as a manager is I really want to like work with people long-term. I've done a lot of like short-term one-off Storm Academy or out of towners or even big names like Kevin Sullivan and Sin Bodhi and stuff like that, but like I really want to work long term with someone. Like, that's where the value is. So yeah, I'd say Kayla J. And then on the men's side of thing,
pardon me,
that's tough. Honestly, I bug him all the time about this, and I know Vinko out in Winnipeg is the Ukrainian Sex Machine. Shout out to him. I love him. I don't know if he'll listen to this, but I know he's sort of AJ or him and O'Doyle's manager, but I love to work with AJ on like a long run, like in town, like not just a one-off CWE show, because AJ is, people don't give AJ Sanchez enough credit. And I'm not knocking Danny. I'm not knocking Danny Duggan in any way here, but like AJ really is the heart and soul of CWE. He just, the guy has worked so many shows. Like, people don't realize how many shows he works in. Before he was working in the States, like literally every weekend AJ was working, or like every week. And he's amassed all this knowledge of where he's worked. So like AJ, I'd love to work with. Another guy I'd love to work with before he retires. I have worked with him on the opposite end of the spectrum. So I was working a tag match with Dick Richards and Evan Adams versus Anderson Tyson Moore and Robbie Royce. And in working with in working with Andy Anderson recently, I love working with veterans. Like one of my big things of coming into PWA, I had my sights set. Like obviously I'll go with whoever the promoter wants to put me with, but if I had a choice, it would have been Duke Durango or Andy Anderson, because I just gravitate towards the veterans because they understand the time when managers were more prevalent. And there's not a lot of managers out there to teach me. I haven't had many to, you know, basically rely on. Yeah. And so the veterans are who you go to. And so, yeah, I love to work with Robbie Royce, working with him, even if it's just for one more match. I know he's winding down his career. He's had some health issues, but I keep bugging him and Andy Anderson, who started out together, to work a match with him. And then if I'm talking about people that aren't working anymore, obviously Duke Durango. I admired him so much going to the PWA shows I went to. And just, that guy's an institution in Alberta.
Yeah, he's fantastic. We did the Top Talent seminar with him, and it was really good. I really enjoyed all the information. He actually was my favorite of all the Top Talent seminars that I did over there, where we were watching it was a video thing, because this was like right when the COVID was happening and we weren't physically trained, but we could still go and look at this TV screen for a couple hours, right? And yeah, he was my favorite one because he was like the most relevant to my situation, because he's like a local guy, you know?
Yeah, as opposed to guys that are sort of signed with other indie companies and are traveling more. Yeah,
100%. Like, you know, like the ones where with like Victor from The Ascension and, you know, Johnny Devine and stuff, they were all fantastic. Every single one of them was really great. But I got so much out of the Duke Durango one.
Yeah, well, I mean, the guy trained in Dungeon. Like, you look at guys like Jericho, who people say he trained in Dungeon. Jericho and Lance didn't train in the Dungeon. They were actually part of, like, the camps that Keith and Bruce were doing. That same guy that trained me with EBW, trained in quotation marks, love Cal to death. He's a local death metal legend. But he trained at a similar camp. It wasn't the same one as Jericho and Lance Storm. But, like, Duke, guys like Duke and Tex...
And
Thunder, like, I was going to call him by his actual name. Like
Thunder on that list for sure.
Yeah, like these guys, like that's, oh man, I actually, a couple weekends ago, I had a good 2-hour phone conversation with Thunder. Just like any moment I have to listen to these guys talk, I will take it and I will eat it up and just like a movie, sit on the edge of my seat, just taking it all in, because these guys have been doing it for so long, and to them, you know, they can go out into the ring and call it, and it's like breathing, and it's like, I want that for me, right? And
yeah.
So like, yeah, for guys that aren't wrestling anymore, like Duke or even like Chi-Chi Cruz, when I first moved up to Edmonton, I obviously went to a few MPW shows and seeing Chi-Chi in his era, like in his time. I know Cheech is retired since, but hearing all the stories, obviously he was a protege of Metal, so hearing all the stories through Metal, he just sounded like he had an amazing mind, and watching him in the ring, like that'd be another
I'm
guy
pretty
I'd love to
sure
work with.
I saw like a Chris Jericho was talking about him recently.
Yeah, it was, what was it?
It was some kind of like the best of Chi-Chi Cruz or something, and like I think Jericho introduced one of the matches. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, well, because I mean, Cheech is from out in Winnipeg, right? So, I mean, obviously they've worked, I think at one point in time they worked shows together. I don't know enough of that history, nor does my brain allow me to remember enough of that kind of stuff. But he sort of shouted him out. And you look at like, was it Dr. Luther? Can't remember his name when he was wrestling in Canada now. When he was younger, but like, anyways, all those guys sort of know each other because that was their time. Like that, this time is ours, or at least last however many 10 years, 10 some years for me. You, I don't know what you've been around, 5-6 years now.
Well, I've been wrestling since 2008,
but part of the industry.
I mean, I've been with RCW since 2014. A lot of the first.
Oh yeah, few so man, even
was,
more, even more than that, because.
Was, yeah, but like, because I mean, like, I did interviews for Victoria's City Wrestling in like 2006.
Like you were working on the show in the back doing interviews.
I do it in the ring on the show.
Oh wow, yeah. So there you go. But like that's, to me, I consider that's when you're sort of indoctrinated into it, mm-hmm. and you understand how it works, and you sit and spend the first few months observing how it works. To me, I consider you to be, obviously you're not a wrestler, but at least you're at some point associated to the business. You have an understanding of the business. So, but yeah, like that was just that era for all those guys. And I try to like read up and basically get whatever I can of that, or when I can actually corner these guys or get a chance to work with them. It's when I really pick their brain and sort of ask stories of the road. And like, I don't get to travel as much, so I don't get the car stories as much as some people do, but
you should start a podcast, bro.
Should I? Well, it's funny. You saw me. I don't know if you saw me post that Twitter post recently. Was saying I just miss talking with people about things I enjoy, and I was like, let's podcast people as a way to put it out there for people to reach out to me. I don't know. Did you see that?
I mean, I don't know if I did or not, but I definitely reached out to you a few times. Over
I was like, is this why he's reaching out to me? Because other people did, but I was just, you know, like it had been a while since I'd done a podcast, and I was like, I want to do it and talk. And we miss people right now and having conversations and stuff because of the pandemic. And everybody thought that was me saying I was going to start my own podcast, but I have zero time to start my own podcast. As much as I'd like to, I always know that as hard as it can be, the Archer Report is my thing. And even though I can't do it, I've started and stopped enough little things that I just kind of like to stick to one thing. I don't want to start a podcast and then it just fade off into the distance eventually, right? And there's so many people like yourself that have podcasts.
So. It's totally fair, but like even for me, like my podcast is basically like a selfish endeavor, because like it gives me the opportunity to talk to people like you, and like, you know, I had Bob Evans on here recently.
Yeah, I had a guy from California, that was a get, man. Brutal Bob Evans, like oh.
And it was like, okay, I get to talk to this dude who's like a veteran. I'm going to learn something talking to him, you know?
You look at how many seminars he's done across North America and who knows how far. Like, that's one guy I'd love to just attend a seminar or listen to him. Like,
yeah, I joined his website. It's all quality content.
Yeah, no, he works really hard at what he does. Like, I don't know if it was Instagram or it was Facebook, but he was doing live videos every day for a while there in his car as he was driving back and forth to things. And just the little tidbits he got out of that were alone amazing. So, yeah, I mean, eventually, but on top of that, work and family life, I just I don't have enough time for. You know how hard it is to book me, because we've done this dance a few times over, and Spencer's listening to this right now fuming, because he's literally bugged me every couple of weeks for the last pandemic. So
well, yeah, that's I mean, that's fair. I mean, I like the fact that for once I've scooped Spencer.
Yeah, because like take that love.
He's usually stupid always, love wrestling. Like getting some great guests, and I'm like, I'd love to have.
I want to sit down with him, but the biggest thing is for me, you and me, like Spencer handles his interviews a little differently. Yeah. And where you kind of shoot on the fly and I shoot on the fly. So I know we can, and Spencer can shoot on the fly, but Spencer's also very meticulous in what he does. And he plans his stuff and he's very professional. I'm not saying you're not professional. There's just different podcasts out there. Like he's a broadcaster. Like as much as he says I'm a podcaster, like Spencer, you've become I was love wrestling exploding and doing your own thing. Now you become a broadcaster. And so his thing is really like hype. Whereas, you know, we're going to tell some stories and you tell stories with Spencer, but his thing is hype. And it's like, I got nothing to promote. Like he'd be bugging me and I'd be like, I got nothing to promote. And he's like, we can still talk. But I'm like with him personally, and this is probably all on me, or actually I'll say it's all on me. I just feel like I should have stuff to plug with him, whereas I know we can just talk about old times and talk about the Archer Report and go from there. Whereas I think we're also both connected to the industry, and he's connected, but he's not within it as much. He's on the peripheral, right? He's not working with companies. So, but I'll get you, Spencer. Don't worry. But I had to get the goose. I owe you one from how many 100%. Years ago
and
now?
Like so. I love, like I've joined up with Spencer's Love Wrestling thing and become one of their like regular contributors, and it's been a great time for sure. Like I have all the love in the world for Spencer.
You've been winning things over there, haven't you?
Yeah, I won $75 worth of Pro Wrestling Tees gift cards that I used pretty much exclusively to buy my own merchandise.
I was gonna say buy it and then turn around and sell it.
Well, the thing is that, like, pro wrestling tees, it's a great thing. They have really quality, like, t-shirts and stuff. When you live in Canada, the shipping charges are
it gets you.
Yeah, they're kind of stiff. So
yeah,
the fact that I won these things, I was like, oh, sweet, I can actually have, like, a actual, like, t-shirt sent to me. Because, like, I mean, you hooked me up with a lady who printed me a few locally, but when she printed them to me, she was upfront with the fact that these are going to fall apart in the wash after a few go arounds, you know?
Yeah, it's a hobby for her, but yeah. it's just an option. Like, I went to her for actually the masks, because I've had a few other different companies work on my shirts. And so I went to her for the masks because, you know, I didn't know who to talk to. And she's actually the sister of a fan. Do you know the fan Jason dresses up for every show, makes signs?
No, I
don't. He'll dress up as Macho Man. He'll sit front row, he'll dress up as Macho Man or Santa. He was Santa at Clandestine.
Okay.
There was a Santa in the audience at Clandestine. So that's Jason. I know him through, he's actually, he works at a local business nearby my place, so we tend to chat, and he mentioned his sister made this stuff as a hobby. She got a little screen press type thing. So that's where I went to her, but it's hard. Like, you, unless you want to put down a ton of money on, like, professionally getting a made and then hope you can recoup that, it's hard to, you know, on a dime to get merch made.
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely something that I've learned. I mean, I've been fortunate that I do get some sales, like, usually every month on my Canadian Goose. It helps that I have a very cool design that was commissioned for me by some of the fellas in the wrestling community. That was, like, completely on you. Like, I appreciated that so much.
It was just a nice thing to do to you, man. The biggest thing I find with independent wrestling is we don't take care of our people enough. Like, we're an ego and drama driven business. But we need to take care of the good people. You know, we need to take care of people like Heavy Metal, who everybody, you know, thinks these horrible things about because he does his character very well. But he's running a school, and we need to help him out and do something like Clandestine to give more views, you know, or more exposure to a school. And sometimes, you know, one of our brothers or one of our sisters is being down and having a downtime, and you pool together and do something for him, man. It's just a testament to who you are, Kyle. that we wanted to do that,
like, so much, because it was like, oh, like, I'm clearly, like, I bring some, like, people see some value in me, or they wouldn't go 100%. Out of the way to do this for me. And I couldn't be happier with the way the design turned out and stuff and whatnot.
Yeah, well, and Roberto is, by the way, at Rad Pencils, Roberto is an actual accomplished comic book artist. So any wrestlers or even fans that want to get something commissioned, look up Rad Pencils. He does amazing work and different styles. Like, I basically gave him an idea and he just knocked it out of the park. Like, he added the geese and everything. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's blown me away and has been a very good seller for sure. And
yeah,
I've got masks available now.
Excellent.
Unfortunately, like, I wasn't able to get a hold of that same lady, Jason's sister there, who did them. But Squig has got a printing press now too, so I've got a deal worked out with him. But I would prefer that if anyone would like to order a mask, please contact me directly, so that, you know, I get my cut.
Spoken like a true indie wrestler.
I mean, I'm not trying to put anybody on blast here, but I know that there was a t-shirt that Denise has that says Sexy Goose, and it's got my picture on it, and I didn't see a dime of that. And I was like, oh, okay. All right,
well, I'm sure she'd. Yeah. I'm sure she would repay you with others.
She has already prepaid me in so many ways. Like, I have life-size posters that she's given me. I have a poster.
I'm actually looking at. I'm looking at one she made of me right now. So
yeah, she made me. She bought me, like, a leather denim jacket that has, like, my picture on the back of it, and then it just says Goose in big letters. It's like,
oh, she got you that?
Yeah, and I was like, wow, thank you. Like, she has a matching one herself.
No, she's amazing. Like, it's, yeah. people people who aren't wrestling fans are obviously not going to listen to this podcast, but if you are and you're not a big wrestling fan, like, the community, the fans themselves are just as amazing as the wrestlers. Like, yeah, some of our fans, the things they do for us, like the things I watched Denise do for BVD, things she's done for his birthday and stuff like that. Like, she's just the sweetest person in the world, and she'll go out of her way to, in her mind, to repay all the, you know, the entertainment we've given her. She wants to do that to us. And, you know, and we're sitting here all flabbergasted by it, but it's just the way she shows her appreciation, right?
Like, yeah, and it's super, super, like, appreciated. And then, like, even, like, Vicky, who does the drawings, she's like a doll too. And then, you know, you got everybody else that's, like, regular people that are just, you know, they're cool to even, like, just see, you know, like, back when I was, you know, I've since quit smoking cigarettes, but back when I was smoking cigarettes, like, it's not hard to find a cigarette at a RCW show, because it's outside, and you know, people
walk, like, walk outside at intermission.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're good people. I've had fans buy me meals, drinks, you name it. It's
100%, and it's a very good time. I mean, you know, Ian Small's brother, John, I felt bad because there was a one match that I did against, it was against Coda, so I ended up having to be the heel, and during the match, like, I was on the outside sort of selling, and I looked up, and there was John, like, I was on the railing, and there's John, and he's eating his plate of french fries, and I just whacked his plate of french fries all over the place. He got, like, legitimately upset, and then after the match, I walked backstage, and Chris Irish was there, and he's like, "Yeah, it's not a good idea to mess with people's food."
No, no, like, I've
okay. Thank you for that little tidbit.
Sometimes you, like, it's this again of just having to throw it against the wall, see if it sticks. Because as a heel, I've done similar things. I think there was once where I spitted out my gum, and this is pre-COVID, obviously. I wasn't thinking, it was just in the moment, and I just remember getting talked to about that, of just how disgusting it is and how upset one of the fans were, and I just wasn't thinking, right? You don't think at the time, you want to get the heat, and
yeah,
that's what happens, so.
You definitely, like, you want to get heat, but you don't want to get the kind of heat where people are like, fuck this show, I'm not coming back, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've seen people that wrestlers have landed on, and things that have happened, and, you know, you try to do damage control on that, and it's not to make up for it. That's one of those instances where, the you know, better to ask forgiveness than permission. That's when it comes to the fans in that moment, it's better to just err on the side of caution than to ask forgiveness later, because asking forgiveness for someone that's upset because a wrestler landed on them or ruined their food, that's pretty big deal. So yeah,
I'm pretty sure, like, the Legion that we do it at, the Norwood Legion, the people that work there are super cool, so it's in all likelihood they probably just gave them another plate of fries. You know, but, like, I don't know, I'm not used to being a heel, right? Like, especially, like, in Edmonton, like, I don't mind doing it in, like, some small
town
where, like, yeah, nobody really knows what the deal is, but, like, when I come into Edmonton and then I just randomly have to be a heel on one show, it's weird, you know.
It doesn't make sense, right? Yeah. And then you're almost overcompensating, because, you know, they know you as one way, and now you're going to try to go the other way, and then unfortunately next show you might be the other way, and then you might get thrown into another heel thing. Like, when that's where that whole disjointedness and the chaotic nature of things can be detrimental to a person's character or what you're doing. And you're new, so sometimes you're going to play with things a bit, but still, it's hard, man. It doesn't make sense. I remember even when it went from ring announcer to being Thaddeus, it was very difficult to try to make that change. And people knew who I was before. And I actually had to, for the first year or two, not talk to fans. And basically, you know, they try to talk to me in intermission or something, and I'd tell them off, and I had to go full kayfabe and push them away, just to, like, it takes time to change that in a person's mind, right? So yeah.
And I think, like, with, like, at least for my situation, like, it's not really a secret that I'm like one of the nicest people in wrestling. So like it puts,
this is true.
Yeah. It's kind of hard for them to buy it. You know what I mean? But like at the same time, like doing a heel promo is like incredibly fun.
Oh, it's the only way to do it.
It's such a good time.
I really do. Just being, I don't think there really should be a lot of face managers. I've kind of grown to appreciate it a little more. And you look at people like Paul Bearer and a lot of valets and stuff like that. They've done it right. But just, it was for me, it's the hardest thing to grasp. So when I got hired at PWA, they told me I was going to be their commissioner and I was going to be a face. And they just blew my mind. Like I actually took one of my shirts out in my back pocket the first time I went out, because I'm like, if I don't know, like, if this turns ugly and they start really like healing on me, and like I'm gonna have to like throw a shirt at somebody just to try to like
yeah, you're gonna have to bribe them to like
that's
you.
What that's why when I came out I kind of walked ringside, and at least I got a response. I was worried that like, you know, some of the fans might not know me, but I got a good, really good response. And then I went up to a kid and gave him the shirt just to kind of like try to give the hint to everyone, it's like, this isn't the Thaddeus you know if you've known me before, guys. I was just so nervous about being face, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's difficult.
Well, like, and that is a thing. Like, in some ways, it is a lot more difficult to be like a baby face than it is to be like a heel.
Oh yeah,
you know? Because
oh, like, way harder. It's easy to piss someone off. It's not easy to make someone happy.
Yeah, you like it's hard to get people to care about you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, and especially, you know, and since kayfabe took the suicide dive, it's even harder because a lot of people like to cheer for the bad guys. I mean, even as a kid who didn't know kayfabe, I felt drawn to Jake the Snake Roberts just because he did an amazing promo. And I'm like, I like this guy. Why do I like the bad guy? Yeah. So it's, and even more as, you know, you get people that are tweeners or your anti-heroes or whatever, like Stone Colds and stuff like that. You really have to do something to get their attention to win them over. So there's people that are very good at it, and most people have somewhat of a time. Nova Scotia and New Brunswick,